Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
Bandwidth for the podcast version of Trey's Variety Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Okay, welcome to the show, everybody. It is a cold and blustery and wintry and blizzardy day here in New Zealand, at least in the South Island. And everyone on the show today is from New Zealand. Let me show you out the window really fast just so you can get a perspective of what's happening here. So here is outside. This is in Queenstown, and it's been snowing all day pretty much. I'm staying here at the Kamenage, which are these really cool places up on the mountain with a great view. There's the gondola that goes up the skyline up there, and there's mountains all over, but they're kind of occluded by the snow. And last night, I was down in town with the gentleman there in the second square, Ben and Chris. We were having sushi while they were showing me some hot tips on the genie, and it started to snow. And then I decided to work my way up the hill. I live up on this place called Queenstown Hill, which is quite treacherous. It's full of treachery. And I spun out at the top of the hill and went backwards about a quarter mile. It was really exciting. And so I ditched the car. My car is down there somewhere in Queenstown.
Kind of is that Gordon's car?
Yeah, that's right. It's not my car. It's Gordon's car. And so Gordon's car is somewhere down there in the mean streets of Queenstown, and I had to walk up uphill in the snow, like I guess my parents used to have to do to go to school. So that is what is happening here in Queenstown. We're going to run around and give some quick introductions here. And everyone can say hello and exactly where they're from and that sort of thing. And they can tell us about, so we'll go left to right. We'll start with you, Belle. So give us your name and your website and what you do and why you're awesome and that sort of thing.
Okay, so I'm Belle. My website's www.bellejones.com. I do bit of a mix of art, illustration, a bit of photography, and amongst other things, also a personal trainer and work with my partner, Tim, as well, on the odd job here and there. Originally from Melbourne, but I live in Wanaka now.
All right. And so all the people watching live on YouTube or embedded in Google Plus or wherever, if you can't understand what these crazy people are saying, let me know, and I'm happy to translate. Okay, let's go to two more relatively unintelligible gents. This is Ben and Chris, the inventors of the genie. Look, I have the genie right here. Look at that thing. It's awesome. We're going to have a full-on discussion about this thing. I've been using it quite a bit, and I love it. It completes me. And these are the guys that started the Kickstarter project. And anyways, introduce yourselves, guys.
So I'm Chris. Yes, I'm the designer of Genie. Originally from just south of here, and then living in Queenstown now for about 2 years.
I'm Ben, and I'm from Nelson originally. We live in Queenstown for about 5 years, and my background is in film production, so been living here doing that for the last 4 or 5 years, and recently been developing, helping Chris and developing the genie over the last sort of 12 months. We're in a full swing with that now.
Hey, Dave, don't you think that Ben looks like Jack from Lost?
Yes.
I know that.
Everyone loves that guy. He's very good looking. Don't worry. It's quite
good.
A
compliment. That's good.
Can't be a bad thing, can it?
Yeah.
All right. And next is
Chris McLennan. He's the wonderful guy that was nice enough to introduce me to Ben and Chris. And, you know, this is actually one reason that I've been sharing their Kickstarter project so crazy over the past few days, is because, you know, I had never even heard of it until Chris told me. And I'm the kind of person that should have heard about it. And I figured that since I'm busy and I didn't hear about it, there's probably a lot of other very busy people that didn't hear about it. So that's why I've been helping to spread it around. So anyway, thank you, Chris.
No worries. Thank you, Trey. Yeah, well, I'm Chris McLennan. I'm originally from Queenstown, down where you guys are at the moment, or the far south. I was born, spent the first half of my career in Queenstown as a photographer. Now I've moved to Auckland basically to be closer to the international airport, as most of my work takes me to other parts of the world. I spend most of my time travelling and working in all corners all over the place, but I love getting back down south. My website is www.cmphoto.co.nz, so NZ for you American people out there. And yeah, thanks for having me along, Trey.
Sure. Thanks for coming, Chris. And the next square is Dave, my most excellent and hardworking producer. How are you, Dave?
I am quite good. Thank you, Trey. And while I'm doing my producer role, I'm going to ask Tim, can you mute when you're not talking? We're picking up every little noise of your desk and stuff like that when you're moving around.
Sure.
It's a little button on the top of the Hangout for a little microphone button.
Cool. And also, Dave, thanks for – we're doing something new in that we're embedding the video player on Stuck in Customs as well. So that's another place people can watch. Okay, next is just around Queenstown Hill from me is Jason Law. And Jason, while you're introducing yourself, you'll have to show us out the window.
It's looking good out there. All right, let's go on the tour. I'll take you outside onto the deck. So I'm a landscape photographer. So I've lived here in Queenstown for 2 years now. And I get to look at this most days. So that's Lake Wakatipu out there.
Cool. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's snowing as hard over there.
Yeah, it's a little few flurries. So yeah, I'm mainly I focus on landscapes. I'm trying to start doing a few portraitures and that sort of stuff. But yeah, pretty much living in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. Yeah, so I'm out most days shooting, trying to capture some special moments. So I sell photos down at the local arts market, and been doing that for about 2 years now.
Cool. Thank you, Jason. And next is Tim Pierce. I mentioned Tim recently over on my blog, and there's a link to his work over there, along with Bell's work. He does really cool stuff. Anyway, I don't want to ruin it for you. Tell us what you do, Tim. And you still might be muted. You can click the little mute button up at the top. Over.
Am I good?
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. My name's Tim Pierce, and I'm from Wanaka. I'm actually born in Papua New Guinea and moved here when I was about 5. And I direct and shoot documentaries and films and commercials and all sorts. I also do a lot of photography. Started out shooting photos and do all sorts of different work, lots of sports work and lots of outdoors work because we live in such an amazing place.
Cool. Thanks, Tim. And next is sitting in his Nerve Center Command Central is Todd Sisson. Hi, Todd.
Hello, Trey. How are you? I'm Todd. Todd Sisson from sisson.co.nz. Once upon a time was a commercial photographer. These days, full-time on landscapes. I actually grew up in Nelson with Ben grew up as well. I unfortunately missed out on the lost genes, but never mind. I live over in Alexandra. It's just over the hill from you guys. And, we have absolutely no snow whatsoever, just freezing, miserable weather. So that's me.
Cool. And just so everyone doesn't think that the New Zealand has been misrepresented by having only South Islanders on here, I do have a North Islander, Simon Morris, who was in earlier, but he dropped. I hope he comes back in. He could tell us what the weather's like. So also just a little production note for everybody. There's a chat window that only we can see, all of us in the Hangout. To keep that open, because sometimes Dave sends messages or we do background type stuff. You can kind of stay alert as to what's happening. So because Ben and Chris from the Genie, the creators of the Genie, they need to go create and go to work. We'll talk with them first, find out more about the Genie, and then we'll go around and everyone will get a chance to show off their work and we can talk and hang out and this sort of thing. So let's start with Ben and Chris. Ben, why don't you here, I'll show off the Genie right here so people can see what it's like and see that it actually exists and it's not vaporware or anything. And yeah. I'm sorry if I do this a disservice. I'll do my best to describe it. So they started a Kickstarter project because they had this amazing idea to make a better time-lapse system, okay? Because I do a little time-lapse. There's people that do fantastic time-lapses. I just dabble in it. But I do know how difficult it is, some of the mechanics of setting up an interesting time-lapse. And that's basically why they built this thing. And essentially, how it works is it's like a little computer, and it's got all these gears and everything in here. And you put it on top of your tripod, and then you put your ball head on top of that, and then your camera on top of that. And then it's got this handy-dandy thing that plugs into the back, and it controls your camera. And it works with basically any camera. And it's very light. It's very functional and fun. There's a computer here with all these little controls, and you can move stuff around and say okay and back. It's very, very clean. I know the UI is going through some changes and this and that as they make the fonts bigger. And this is just a prototype that I've been, they may never give me another prototype after I hand this thing back to them. But it's a lot of fun. That's sort of the secret thing about it, is that it's just really, really fun, and it gets you excited. And anyway, so why don't you tell us more about how you came up with the idea and a little bit about the Kickstarter product?
Yeah, we came up with the idea a while ago, and probably about a year ago. We actually originally started to think about making accessories just for DSLRs and trying to move in line with this sort of boom in popularity with filming with DSLRs. And we actually started designing a dolly to begin with, just a slider. The current one that I had wasn't doing me much justice, and so that was sort of the starting point. And we found that sort of time lapse is getting big as well, so we tried to integrate that to the dolly, and then Chris sort of just came up with this idea to build a box that could connect to anything, a dolly, a slider or cable cam or whatever, and basically turn it into a motion control device. So that's sort of where it came up, and that's been developing over months. And then we'd always say Kickstarter in the back of our mind. I think we've been watching that sort of grow as well, which is a pretty fast growing platform for new creative projects. So we always wanted to go in there and managed to do it. And in the last two months ago, we went on there and went for our funding. So that's been a full-time job in itself, but going well. And yeah, we're just about to wrap that up in probably about 4 hours. So yeah.
Yeah, it's very exciting. So, Chris, what's some of your background in design, and what kind of brought you into this thing to make something so interesting?
I guess I've always had a passion for photography and film, but never done it as a profession. And then I guess over the last 5 to 10 years, I've worked as an industrial designer internationally, a lot of time in Australia, Germany, and the States. And so, yeah, I came together with Ben. I knew Ben from university. And, yeah, it was really a case of wanting to design something that was better and much more affordable. And really my focus is on sort of the user interaction. So our sort of whole company and our design perspective is really around building something that's really easy to use, and just intuitive, and just sort of taking the technical part away from the photographer, and you can focus entirely on your creativity. And that's sort of where the genie came in. As you say, just something you can get excited about and use and not have to think about too much. You focus on your shot rather than the equipment.
Cool. So, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was just going to ask the guys. I know you've got a lot of pre-programmed settings in there for different scenarios with time-lapse, but you're able to go in and manually create your own and save those as well, I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. We'll be sending it out with a few sort of factory presets that we think are a good starting point. And then obviously once you've done a time-lapse, you've got a situation you might do quite often, then you can just save that, name it, and then it's in there ready to go for next time. So hopefully over a bit of time, you'll sort of build up a nice little portfolio of presets that you can go to straight away.
Cool. Is there a limit to how many you can go in there, or is it?
I think the limit's 200 or 300. So.
Oh, okay. Not really. Yeah, that should do it.
Yeah.
Cool. And so all those configurations, they're done just on the unit itself. You don't even need to lug around a laptop to program all this stuff. It's right there.
It's all integrated into the one box, so the interface it's all saved within the Genie. There's no external controller or batteries or anything like that. So you've just got this one neat package that slips inside your camera bag. You take it, take it everywhere. It's a regular button. Just use it if you're using remote locations or wherever need be.
Hey, I have a question here for you guys. This is from Nicole S. Young. She says, she goes, I cannot wait for it. I'm considering backing it or buying one when they're out. I've been following it for a while. By the way, Nicole, you should buy one now because it's much cheaper than later when it comes out. So back to her email, she says, could you ask them a question for me? I'm wondering how much it weighs along with the battery. I want to find out before I buy it to see if it would be something I could easily add to my camera bag without weighing me down too much. It's so portable, and I love, all caps, making time-lapse movies, smiley face.
So I guess the weight of the unit is about 1.2 kgs, I think. So about 2.5 pounds. And it's pretty compact. The actual final version that'll be going to production is actually smaller than the one that you've got, Trey. So it's even more portable, I guess. Fits in your camera bag pretty easily.
Cool. And she asked about the battery too, but the battery's not removable, is it?
Hang on. So I had two questions there.
I asked about the battery. The battery's not removable, is it?
No, so there's an internal battery, we've never run out of battery power so far in long day shoots. So it's pretty long time that it'll last. We haven't got exact figures. Obviously, it depends a lot on your time-lapse and the situation. But you can also run the unit off external power. So it'll accept anything from 10 to 25 volts. So you can run it off car or any of the sort of standard external battery products.
Cool. Hey, go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry. I think we asked a question at the same time.
That's all right. I was just curious. What other kind of equipment can you use with it to get some sort of interesting time lapses?
We got your standard tripod for panning time lapses, and the slider are kind of my most obvious ones that I think people use. But beyond that, I mean, it could be integrated into a jib arm, a cable cam. We made a DIY cable cam, pretty ghetto little thing, but it worked really well. The Genie just popped on there and pulled it along. So I mean, there's a lot of scope for DIY projects. Anything that people can come up with that basically moves, the Genie will be able to pull it along. So but the main things I guess people originally think about are the slider and the tripod. A lot of other things in the works as well that it could be used with.
Cool, excellent. There's only a few hours left, right, for this thing. I'm going to go in, I'm going to share my screen, I'm going to buy it right now. Okay.
All right.
Hey, By the way, Dave, would you check to see the live stream if it's working okay on Second Customs? I had a few questions and tweets about it while I do this. Okay, yeah, so
I'm working on it.
Okay, first time ever, a live. This is going to be exciting. This is a live Kickstarter backing on a Google Hangout. This is really exciting. Okay, hold on. Screen share. Sorry, go ahead, Todd. What'd you say?
I was just going to say, I hope there's some space left on your credit card there, Trey.
Yeah, okay. $620,000. Yeah. My God, you guys. Okay.
Bargain.
So, well done, boys.
Oh, look at that. You were only trying to raise $150,000, but you got over four times that. 4 hours left.
Wow.
And this is the time to buy, right? Because it's going to be cheaper than later.
Yeah, for sure.
And so even if you don't want one, people, you know, if you want to back these innovative guys, you can even just put in $1, $15 just to give them a little pat on the back for being innovative. Okay, so what do I want to do here? Do I want to do the $690? Does this give me a good situation?
Yeah, you can go for the 10 grand option if you want there, Trey, but tough
to do. No, I want this $690 because I get rope. This is like I'm a D&D character and I'm going on a dungeon. It's always good to have rope. You could do anything. Yeah. So I get 6.5 feet of rope.
Do you get the shouting rope, like a llama with the 690?
Nah, that's separate, Jason.
You got to get that as well.
$1
$691 for that.
Yeah.
So, just a second here. Is the difference between the 690 and the 590 a rope?
No, the 590 was just there for the very beginning of our Kickstarter project. So that was really just to get things going. We just had an early bird kind of special. Also, really just to say thanks to the people who are really close to the project that wanted one.
That sold out in about 10 days. Oh, man. All right. I was too slow. Okay, so I got to get this thing. Okay, I just clicked it. All righty. Just a few short steps. 600. Okay. Now what do I do? Do I go to the bottom and say... Okay, go to the bottom and I say, continue to next step. Okay, this is exciting. Now, you do all the payment through Amazon, right?
Yeah.
So I say, continue to Amazon. And when does Amazon send you all this money so you could just throw it on your bed and roll around in it?
I don't think we actually get any money until the end of July. But yeah, I think your credit card will get charged tonight, I believe.
All right. Okay. I'm signing in using their... Okay. That's my old address. I don't care if anyone sees it. Okay. Confirm. All right, you guys. Congratulations. Look at that.
Cheers for that, man. Cheers.
Look at that. I'm the proud new owner of a real genie. Very exciting. I should go buy something from every one of you. What did you say, Jason?
Sorry. I was just curious, when will Trey have his new time lapse rig, his new genie?
About a week after mine, I think.
it's quite far down the list, obviously, now, so...
Yeah.
Cool. Does anyone else here have any questions for these guys before they have to run off and do whatever they need to do?
How long have you guys been working on this for?
This will be sort of about a year and a half now. The primary kind of design and engineering sort of phase was about a year. And then we've come in and out of it off and on when we've run out of money and done other jobs for a while and come back into it. So it was sort of maybe March last year where we kind of started it. And then got stuck into it in the later part of last year. We went on to sort of full.
It's awesome. I'm a product designer in my previous life, and I know how much effort it takes to get these products into market. So, you know, awesome effort from you guys to do it off your own back and
well done.
Get it off the ground. So,
Cheers. Awesome, guys. Can't wait to get hold of it. And on that note, you'll be heading into production shortly, I guess. And any idea on sort of ETAs for the product?
Well, obviously there's a bit more of a delay for the cash to come in from Kickstarter, we were hoping, so that's pushed things back a couple of weeks. But at this stage, it's looking September, hopefully early to mid-September. Not too far away. We've got the final production, pre-production circuit boards are on their way now, so they'll be going through some rigorous kind of testing. There's a little bit more, a few tweaks to go on software. And then, production will hopefully begin around the end of July when we get the money installment.
Just a quick question, guys, on the sort of the support thing. You mentioned, Trey mentioned you're messing around with the UI at the moment. Support down the line, say you make some fundamental changes to that, that can all be updated, I presume, in the unit?
Yeah, you can just download updates directly from our site. And at this stage, it's done through an SD card, so same as you'd update your camera. Essentially, you copy the file from the SD card, put it in, and press update. The way it goes, So we kind of, there's obviously a limited amount of stuff we can do as well as getting this going. So at this stage, there'll be a few extra things we know are going to happen, but they'll be coming out past the Kickstarter kind of period. Infinitely updatable, hopefully.
Yeah, cool.
Excellent. Any other final questions for these guys? No? Okay, so all right.
Go ahead, Jake. Have they got any other things in the pipeline boiling away?
We've got quite a few other projects that have kind of been sort of coming in and out. They keep being put on hold and focused on this. But, we've been working on a track that will kind of integrate with it and some other products. We've got a lot of ideas. We're just short on time. But there's plenty of things that will be coming up soon. We're just really focused on making things easier for photographers and filmmakers. All our products are kind of geared around that kind of side. Hopefully some more things will be coming out very soon.
Awesome. Exciting stuff.
All right, cool, guys. Well, we'll bid you adieu now. Thanks for coming. Thanks for taking time. And go get to work and get this thing built and shipped out. Everyone is ready. I'm excited. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
We'll see you guys around town, no doubt.
Cool. All right, bye, guys.
See you guys.
See ya.
See you guys.
Okay, let's share some photos. We'll start left to right, but before we go to Bell, I'll share a few quick photos I took this morning in the snow of my kids, because I have three kids and my littlest girl has never seen snow before. And I know this is inconceivable to all of you people in New Zealand that someone could reach the tender age of three and never see snow. But when you live in Texas, you very rarely know. So this is very exciting. Okay, so anyway, I will share my excitement by sharing these photos. Let me go pick my iPhoto. So this is her out front of the commandage here. We went outside and she just had a ball. She didn't even know what to think of it. Here she is with a snowball about to go peg me. For whatever reason, kids always throw snowballs right into your crotch. And I think it's funny. There's nothing funnier than hitting dad in the crotch. I mean, that's high excitement.
Well, straight down the neck, I find, is the other place.
Yeah. I think she's looking for the car.
Yeah. And then there's my other daughter. She's having fun, too. Okay, so that's a little hot photo right from this morning. Let me unscreen share, and we'll go over to Belle now, who's in her little hat.
Well, it's cold upstairs.
Yeah, I can't believe he just
kicked out.
You guys missed the pre-show. So Tim and Belle were in the same room. And we thought he would be very gentlemanly and chivalrous because one of them had to leave the room, and he turned around and he said, why don't you leave? I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah. That's
so,
right, I'm used to it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's very medieval here in New Zealand, I'm noticing. There's very medieval things that happen. It's nice, though. Lots of meat and potatoes and women that leave as soon as you tell them you're done with them. So anyway, Belle, show us some of your work. You can show us your photos or illustrations or whatever you want to share.
Yeah, I thought I'd share some of my just illustration and art from the last year that I've done, just a little selection of images. So just go to your screen share. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. So we'll start with this one. A lot of my work somehow has managed to end up with a lot of birds involved with it. I don't know if that's... When I was younger, I used to have a lot of pet birds, so if that's something sort of embedded in me into my older years. But as you can see, a lot of them...
Are these pen and ink or pencil? Or?
A lot of the work that I do is mainly pen on paper. I'll just try and zoom in. So you can see, so this is stippling or pointillism. So I've done the entire, this is quite small, this one, but done the entire piece just by dots. So it's very time consuming, but rewarding at the end when the whole piece comes together. So that's quite a small one, but then we get to this one, which is about A1 or A0. So when you zoom in again, all of her through her hair and her face. I just like the control that you can get with this style of drawing, rather than laying down lines and you're kind of stuck with it once it's down. I also do watercolor. This is a watercolor piece I did a little while ago.
I just got an incoming question about your dot works. How long does it take?
Something like that bird or this one here with the girl with the crows hanging up from PowerPoints from a tree branch. That branch probably took me a couple of days to do. When I'm just patient enough to sit down and punch it out, as you can see, all the, it's a little bit pixelated there, but all the tones and that are just achieved by the dots.
Yeah, you really got to see the stuff in the flesh. Like Belle works in our office just over here, and I can remember watching her do that branch. Just very, very time consuming, but the detail is absolutely amazing in that stuff.
So then I've got another one in that series. It's a hand sort of plugged in via a cable into the wall there.
So again, will you share the stuff on the web and will you share it on your blog and this sort of thing? How do you, because, you know, the detail, the whole thing is wonderful, but also every little quadrant that you might zoom in on is really wonderful too. So I've seen other artists that share stuff, like they show the whole thing and they show about 10 little zoom-ins that show it off. Have you thought about that?
I've got on the page, the illustration page, just like just at the bottom there, just three little details of each of these larger ones sort of depicting a section of the image, just so that it does sort of highlight that it's not just the shaded or sort of pencil or anything like that, that it is just individual dots with these ones. And then along with that, I'd also do a lot of, this was a bit of an experiment. Bit of an experimental piece with a lot more color than I usually use. And for some reason, the quote, "I ate all of your dinosaurs," was popped into my head. It sort of seemed quite fitting with this prehistoric type bird. But so that's watercolor on paper. Again, watercolor on paper, birds, and so they're all a little bit grim, and I get asked a little bit if I'm depressed or I'm happy. I'm not.
Yeah, just being with him.
Sorry.
Is this isn't a reflection of your relationship, is it?
It's just, you feel what Tim wants you to feel. Yeah. What he tells you is, you're feeling happy today, love.
Yeah. Say that again. No, it's not. I'm completely happy, content person. A lot of sleeping birds, I like to call them.
when you're doing that, just a quick question. This stuff does my head in. Just how amazing it is. How much concentration goes in? You take 2 days to do your branch. It's all done in pen, and you're onto your final crow. Then Tim says, "Hey, lady, go make me a cup of coffee," and you balls up the bird at the end. What happens? I mean, how do you have to put like superhuman amounts of concentration to get there? Because it would do my head in if I lost 4 days work like that. Or can you repair it somehow?
No, I mean, I've definitely got to be in the right mind space to be doing it. As soon as it starts getting frustrating, it's usually me getting up and asking Tim if he wants a cup of coffee rather than the other way around.
I was just having you on. I know
Tim's not. Tim's got a hard life.
Just made him lunch before, scrambled eggs on toast with salmon.
He's I'm gonna go.
You haven't got a sister, have you?
Yeah.
No.
Is there a room available over there? Take a flatmate.
Trey, you're muted, I think.
So with your work,
you missed my joke. Tim also has the sister. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Cool. Thanks. What else do you want to show us, Bell, or is that?
I'll flick through this. So again, this is just pen on ink, really quite detailed through there. A little bit of stippling and line. So yeah, once you get the bigger picture of it, this little guy is a little bit gruesome. But I might share that with you.
Just a little.
So it's got, again, I love the detail in it. And again, when you zoom in, you can see there's hands and the guts. And sort of
just a quick question, Bell.
Yep.
Do you have like the concept that you hit at the start, or does it kind of evolve? How do you approach it?
I'll have a little bit of an idea of what I want to achieve, but as I get more and more in depth and along with the process of the drawing, it sort of inspires itself and I get ideas along the way, if that makes sense. I have a rough idea of what I want to do, but it comes together at the same time as I'm doing it.
Because I guess when you're dealing with pen on paper, you can't just rub it out. So
No, not at all. And so, like, if I make a mistake, I'll just kind of run with it and make it like I was meant to do that. And I'll share this one last one, which is a little bit different to what I normally do. I was approached by a guy in Australia to do a commission for an oil painting. And I hadn't done an oil painting for about 7 years since I left school. So this is a good little refresh on getting back into that again. And so it was just, I went out with my friend and took a photo in Lake Wanaka, just sort of similar to how the client wanted it, and replicated it as an oil. And that's 180 by 1.8 meters by 1.2 meters, so it's quite a lot larger than what I normally work with as well.
And how long did that take, Belle, that one?
That one took me about 3 months.
Wow.
Hey, I'd like to show... Hey, Belle, can I show them the deer that you're working on at the moment?
Oh, yeah. Should I... Do I unshare my screen or...?
To put this... To put Belle's art in scale, I'll just unplug my headphones and show you this deer that she's working on right now. It's pretty massive. 1 second.
Oh, so you can move, Tim.
He's been caught.
So while that's happening, Simon emailed me. He wanted to express his apologies, but he's having major bandwidth issues and he can't really seem to get back in.
Can you guys see that?
Yeah, you see that. Hey, Belle, why don't you unscreen share your screen so we can see you, and then you can tell us about what we're looking at.
Okay, so that board there with the frame around is actually the frame that I used to mount the canvas that last image, that oil painting, was on. And once, because I had to ship it over to Australia for the client, and so I just had this framed board sitting in the office, and I thought, well, I may as well do something constructive with it, and kind of like the idea of the stag and the antlers and just the size of it, because obviously it's such a huge animal, but the feet are actually trees in the ground. I don't know if you can all see that there, just another little twist of mine that I like to put on a regular piece.
Were you an emo at school, Bill?
No, I was
just asking.
I was the fat kid that got picked on.
Same. It's all right. We turned out all right.
Yeah. I don't think I was emo, though.
No, just having it on.
Cool. Thanks for sharing that with us, Bill. Cool stuff.
That's beautiful work, Bill. Lovely.
Yeah, awesome.
What's your next project?
Well, currently I still haven't finished that stag off, so I've got that to finish off for, it's in an exhibition in Wanaka for the Mountain Film Festival next Friday. So he'll maybe be finished up for that.
Cool. Okay, well, good luck for that.
Thank you.
Yes, okay, Chris, it's your turn for show and tell.
All right, I'll just pop onto screen share here. Just let me know when you can see things here.
Yes.
How's that? Are you seeing my picture there?
Yeah, we see your awesome picture. That makes everybody jealous.
Well, you can go and do that easy enough. This is actually in the Lost World in the Waitomo Caves in the North Island of New Zealand. You can actually go there as a visitor and do this trip. It's a 330-foot rappel or abseil into this cave. So you're only seeing about 20% of it in this picture here, but it's quite amazing. There's a huge cavern, about 400-meter cavern. You drop through a hole at the top that's only about 20 meters across, and there's just amazing shafts and a diffused light coming in. There's enough light that you're just getting moss and ferns and things growing on the wall. So it's quite spectacular. It's not that easy to photograph, but when you nail it, it's amazing. So that's probably one of my better-known photos. It won, I think, in 2009 or 2010. It won the National Geographic PDN Great Outdoors Image of the Year. So that was pretty nice. I'll just move through quickly. I've got a few photos in a folder here, so I'll just whip through fairly quickly. This is another cave shot from Canyon X in Arizona. It's reasonably close to the normal slot canyons that everybody goes to, but the day that I was there and had intended to go to Antelope Canyon, I think there was 500 people booked in. So we got a private guide and went to Canyon X, and there was only three of us in the cave for the whole 8 hours, which was amazing. Moving on from here, I'm fairly close to where you come from here, Trey. This is in New Mexico, Angel Fire Ski Resort in New Mexico. It's about an hour and a half exposure. So basically it's the Earth's rotation giving you the star trail effect. And really interesting. There was literally no noise at all in this picture, which is, you know, for an exposure of that length is quite uncommon. But it's just the cold temperatures. It was really ridiculously cold. I've tried doing this in the tropics, and you get to 10 minutes and the image quality starts to fall to bits with noise. So, great fun in the cold. Not so easy in the warm. And it's interesting, the pink light on the snow that you're seeing in the foreground here, it was so dark I couldn't even see my way back to the camera apart from the flashing light on the back to say that it was running. But the pink light is actually coming from, I don't know if you know, the little drip coffee machines. There was one of those inside a ski patroller's hut with that little red switch, a little glowing switch on it that was coming out the window, and over that period of an hour and a half, it was lighting up the snow. So couldn't see that at all at the time.
Wow. Hey, so did you sleep up there? Did you have to go down the
snow
in the dark? What did you do?
No, I sat in the hut. We sat in the hut, me and my assistant, actually. We got dropped up on a snow machine to the top of the mountain, and we sat there, and we kind of had all the groomers and everything were diverted so they wouldn't come near it for a couple of hours. I was shooting for the resort, and the marketing manager, I'd explained to him what I was trying to do, and he loved the idea. The operations manager hated the idea because it meant they couldn't run groomers up there, and he was like, we're not an astronomy place, we're a ski resort. But when he saw the picture the next day, he was just over the moon. So it's been used for billboards and posters and all sorts. So yeah, it's kind of nice when you have a concept like that and it comes off. And
cool. Yeah.
All right, just quickly going to move on to this half underwater shot taken in a lagoon in Bora Bora in Tahiti. My goal here was basically just to take a shot half underwater, split level, so I could see Mount Otamanu in the background. It's sort of a very well-known mountain in Bora Bora. My local guide that I was with thought it would be a good idea to throw dead fish at me while I was in there to bring the sharks in a bit closer, which, you know, there was sharks bumping into me and bashing into me while I was taking it. It was amazing, but what it did do that we weren't expecting was brought in the seabirds, so I was lucky enough in a number of shots to get seabirds swooping in for a feed as well, so it's kind of different. Here we've got some rice terraces in southern China. That's fairly self-explanatory. I won't delve on that too long. The next one was in South Australia during the cattle muster. I was actually on an assignment for Discovery Channel shooting for a show called Atlas Australia. And a lot of it was about the life of the jackaroos, and this was a watering hole that actually in the daytime is a chocolate brown muddy water, very small watering hole. And this particular morning I'd got up early and seen these incredible reflections of the sunrise in the desert. So I actually came back the next morning and we sort of set up the campfire nice and close to the water, and it's about 4:30 in the morning, and voila, that was the shot. This one's a point of view shot with I had a camera mounted with a 14mm lens onto a dog sled in Alaska at about minus 40 degrees, and I was actually following along behind on a snowmobile or snow machine and firing with a remote control, and we did a whole series like that. It was kind of fun. I did an expedition across, we did 1200 kilometers across Alaska on snow machine last year in February during the Iditarod dog sled race. Excuse me. And we slept in a teepee at minus 40 to minus 50 degrees, and there was all sorts of challenges involved with this particular shoot, but we got there.
Chris, are you shooting for a client or is that a personal thing you're doing?
The Alaska one?
Yeah, or the Iditarod.
The Iditarod, I shot the Iditarod 2 years ago for Tourism Alaska, or parts of it, but we could only access, you know, generally the media can only get to the start and finish line, and yeah. I managed to convince them to fly me into a place in the middle of the race called Galena. And I teamed up with a local guy there who had actually run the race twice, and we went out from there to his little log cabins and to a couple of remote places in the race. And from there, I decided that I really wanted to go back and see a bit more of, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and what these guys go through. So the following year, which was last year, I put together the project myself, and I pitched it to a few of my sort of industry contacts, and we had good support from Lexar, Lopro, Hewlett-Packard, Canon, and Harnell, various others, and we went up there and produced a series of little online advertisements, if you like, and still images. So it was a project that I put together myself, but got good backing from within the photography industry.
Cool.
So yeah.
So great. Great Sunstar. Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Sunstar's a nice one. What lens is that on, if you don't mind me asking?
Canon 14mm.
Right.
It's fantastic for Sunstars. You know, as long as you're using a small aperture, it's just so clean compared to any other lens I've used, for including the sun. There's a couple further on I'll show you as well where it's probably even cleaner. There's a lot of little bits of snow flying around there, which you can see. But it's an amazing lens. And also, when I've been up there. Sorry?
Sorry. Is that a handheld shot, or have you mounted it?
No. I had it mounted on the sled on a Manfrotto Magic Arm. And I had a remote control, and I was on a snowmobile behind firing it. So, yeah. And also, we'd been shooting the Northern Lights the year before we were up there, and I had this idea that I'd called up my mate, the guide, and told him I wanted to do a, a shot of the Northern Lights with a tent in the foreground with a lamp in it and the dog team sleeping alongside the tent, and he thought I was an idiot, which he's probably quite right. And anyway, we planned that shot and we ran the dogs for 100 miles the day that we wanted to do it, so they'd be calm enough to hopefully sleep by the tent. And we had it all planned out for this evening, and normally the Northern Lights don't come on till sort of midnight till 4 in the morning's the peak. But we got in, and about 7 o'clock in the evening, the whole sky started going crazy. So we were running around, getting the dogs hooked up and getting out and trying to put up the tent. And we were in such a hurry that we left behind the snowshoes, and we were sort of groveling around up to our armpits in the snow. And we finally got it all together and got the shot, which will be this next one here. So, yeah, we were treated to like Northern Lights like I'd never seen before. The whole sky was just dancing with colour. It was quite amazing. And the reds and things and purples in there you could actually see with your naked eye. Normally, you only see the greens, but the reds do come up in the images. It was amazing. It was cold, though.
How long was the exposure on that shot, Chris?
That shot there, I think, was 8 seconds. We started off at about 15 seconds, and I think I was on F2, just going by memory because I don't have that information in front of me. And it started about 15 seconds to get a nice exposure, and it got so bright that we're down to around 8 seconds. I think it was at 800 ISO.
Magic.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Crazy. And 8 seconds. It seems like it would be longer, but wow.
Yeah, no, it was very bright, very bright. This guy, he was a Jamaican dog sledder, the first, like the Jamaican bobsledder. He's the first Jamaican ever to enter and complete the Iditarod. He's an amazing guy. So. And here we've got a local Eskimo woman in traditional dress up near Nome, which is close to the finish line of the Iditarod. She was out there. Everybody comes out from all the little villages to watch the teams go through. So she was out there in a traditional costume. It was amazing. The handiwork in this costume is quite incredible.
It's a stunning photo, Chris.
Cheers. Thank you. And that's, I don't know if any of you have ever watched The Deadliest Catch. Well, if you have, that's actually the frozen Bering Sea right in front of her there. So we actually crossed.
Is that fill flash or reflectors?
No, that's actually with that big white reflector on the ground. Yeah, mm. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Massive amount of snow. Yeah. And there's my cruising mobile for 1,200 kilometres at night. As you can see, it's pretty cold. Loaded up with camera equipment, fuel, food, tripod with dollies on them. And yeah, that was home for about 8 days. With GoPros mounted on it and all over the place. It was a lot of fun. Then I'm going to move on to some more Alaska images, but these are in the summertime. I'm actually running a photography workshop up in Alaska in August with the grizzly bears during the salmon run, so this is kind of a close-up look at some fresh sashimi. And a couple of big boys fighting. And just another wildlife shot here. This is a humpback whale in Australia. It's around 40 tonnes, so it's a lot bigger than it actually looks on your screen. It's quite amazing. And one of the other things that I really like doing is kind of different angles and different takes on your normal adventure or action type images. So here's one of a very well-known freestyle motocross rider, Levi Sherwood. I mounted a 5D on the handlebars or in front of the handlebars of his camera and with a fisheye lens and fired it up from the ground while he was in the air. So that actually won the Nat Geo PDN Great Outdoors Photo of the Year the following year to the cave one. So I think that was either last year, 2010 or 2011.
That shadow on the grass is pretty epic.
Yeah, that makes it. That was pretty careful planning to get that one, Jason. That was, so we had no idea we were going to get that shadow, so I was very, very stoked when we got that. Yeah, it really adds to it. And you can see what's going on. So this one, same thing. I mounted a 5D off the front of a skateboard and fired it with a remote while I was riding the skateboard at the slow shutter speed. So it's not actually going quite as fast as it looks, but the shot came off pretty sweet. Crossing a stream on a mountain bike, but taking a look at it from under the water rather than above the water. And again, just that little bit different. And this was with an 8mm fisheye lens. This was in Fiji on a 150-foot yacht that I was running a photography workshop on. And I just, when I first saw this 8mm lens, I decided that I knew this shot. I really wanted to get this shot, but didn't realise how difficult it was actually going to be. We'd tried all sorts of things. I'd been up the mast the day before and walking out on these spreaders here and trying to get the shot. And with the lens that wide, I couldn't get everything in without the mast just overtaking the whole picture. So trying to nut out how to get the camera up. And in the end, I rigged lines from both masts, and we actually hauled it up without me having to go up because there was no way we could get high enough in between the two masts that I could come up with. But what it is, we pulled the camera up and got it about halfway up, and some of the crew members come running out going, "No higher, no higher." You know, they're yelling out to me, don't put it up any higher. And of course, I wanted to get it to the top. I didn't know what they're talking about. But what happened is once it got us past a certain point, the weight of the camera wasn't heavy enough. So we got it up there. We couldn't get it back down. So I had a couple of Fijian guys actually climb up one of these wire ropes and reached out and hooked it and brought it back down. And eventually we got it right to the top with a couple of dive weight belts hooked on each side of the camera and a fishing line actually to make sure we could retrieve it. Here we got another one, just a little bit different, of a mountain biker doing a massive backflip overhead. It's actually a young guy from Elmo Cotter from Wanaka, so he's a local for some of you boys down there. Again, I'd done a shot like this a few years earlier before they were pulling such amazing stunts. I had a guy just overhead up the normal way, and I really wanted to get the same shot again, but with a guy inverted. So I lit it, you know, with a studio strobe with an Alichrome Quadra, and another interesting shot with a point of difference. The next couple are going to be some cultural ones from Papua New Guinea, where I think, Tim, you said you were born there, I believe.
Yep. I was born on Manus and lived in Mauritania for a bit.
Yeah. Nice. So this is not a relative of yours, this one?
Is this your baby picture?
Yeah. I was just checking that it wasn't a family member. Yeah, so this is a Pogla mudman, actually, from the highlands of Papua New Guinea. So fairly crazy-looking get-up for us when we go there. You know, as an outsider, it's pretty amazing seeing some of these cultures and how intact they are in the remote areas and how friendly they are. As soon as you're getting away from the built-up city areas, how incredibly friendly all of the locals are. It's a reasonably dangerous place to visit in the cities or anywhere where there's been Western influence. But as soon as you get away from that, it's quite amazing. And faces and the, you know, the culture is really quite incredible. So again, in the highlands of Papua New Guinea, in a different area, this is the Huli Wigman. They make, it's actually a wig that he's wearing. It's all made out of human hair and birds of paradise feathers. And these guys go away and sit and spend weeks and weeks making these wigs. And you know, a lot of these guys are still dressed like this every day. Even we actually flew in, there's quite a big mining area there. We flew into Tari, and it's one of the more built-up areas that we went. But when we landed in this airport, the baggage handler came out, and he was basically wearing exactly what this guy's wearing here, except he had an orange safety vest on. He came out and unloaded the baggage from the plane. This guy's in Egypt making charcoal for the shisha pipes. So it was about 50 degrees outside, and he's in this series of stone walls with a fire going, pouring water on it to make the charcoal. It was incredibly hot, but it's shafts of light coming through a hole in the rock, which lit up his face and made for a pretty cool shot. I'm going to move fairly quickly through here because there was a few of these. This is Mesa Arch in Utah. Sunrise, quite an interesting phenomenon. This arch hangs off the front of the cliff. It's actually slightly forward of the cliff. And as the sun comes up, this is about an hour after sunrise, but as the sun comes up, it reflects off the front of the cliff face and it lights up the arch almost. You think you're in Las Vegas or somewhere. It's almost like a neon light. The whole thing just glows. It's really an amazing phenomenon. And there's usually, you know, the morning I was there, there was probably 10 other photographers there. But as soon as the light had come over the horizon down here, they all left, and I waited on for another hour and got the shot as it came above the arch. And that's, again, the 14 mil with that super clean star. It's quite stunning. It's a great lens. And home for quite a few of you guys. Wanaka, this was last week, actually. I was down, I'd popped over to Wanaka for a day and got probably the most photographed tree in Wanaka. But nice clear water in that 14 mil again. And I'll skip the next one. And the last one, this was in Bora Bora in Tahiti. I was over there on a shoot, and this was actually a really, really stormy day. It was pouring with rain and sort of thinking of what to shoot, and decided to shoot nothing because it was torrential rain. I was sat on the deck of my room with a glass of champagne in my hand that the client had given me and trying to block the sun out because it popped out at the last minute on the horizon. I was blocking the sun out with my foot, and I was like, ah, that's a photo. So this was taken with a tiny clearing, my toes trying to block out the sun, and a glass of bubbly in hand. So can't complain about that. So that's it from me. So I'll pop out of the screen share and let you move on from there.
All right, cool. Thank you, Chris. So I guess we have three guys left here, and maybe you guys could share a few photos of your own. Jason, you want to start with you, and then we'll go Tim and then Todd.
Cool. I'll just jump into the screen share.
Yeah, we see it.
You can see that?
Yep.
Excellent. So, I'm fortunate enough to live in beautiful Queenstown, and this shot I took this morning. So as you're driving around doing your thing, there's all sorts going on in the landscape. So, this one I pretty much just pulled off into a bus stop and captured this. So, it's Deer Park Heights with the Markles mountain range in behind there.
That's cool.
Nice. You did get some snow last night, huh?
Yeah. Probably at about 3 or 4 centimetres up where I live. Coronet got about 30 centimetres, I think.
Oh, wow. They'll be loving it for Winter Festival.
Yeah. Definitely better than last year. So this last week we've had some pretty amazing weather, really. We had a blanket of cloud and mist for almost 2 days. So I went down to Lake Hayes and I got the shot. So I had to clear out all the foreground. This was all just filled with leaves. So I spent about 20 minutes just clearing leaves out of the lake, doing a bit of landscaping and sort of revealed the scene. Just something I'm really interested in is simplicity. So it's sort of my progression, I guess, as a photographer is kind of trying to remove things. So that's sort of where I'm heading, I guess. And this shot here is this is Milford Sounds. So Mitre Peak and the whole Sounds is back there somewhere. Up in here. So this was very early in the morning. So I got down to my location and it was basically super heavy fog. And the lake was dead still. So these ripples coming in are actually the very first ripples of the day. Probably about 10 minutes after this, the first few boats went out and the mist sort of started lifting, and that was it. So the scene was over. So this is Milford Sounds as well. So it's Mitre Peak just in here. So that that was buried in the mist in the previous shot. This is quite a special photo for me. Really, it's probably. Would be my first photo that I took that was a special moment, really. So it started out as a single sun ray out this way through here, and then it just sort of opened up, and sort of within a minute, couple minutes, everything's just disappeared. But just having that awareness, I guess, and having time to wait for things and looking for different signals, I guess, which might lead to an interesting photo.
Stunning, beautiful.
So this is a rather familiar tree. So I think this is probably the most photographed tree in New Zealand, or possibly even the world. I don't know, but. It's a very special tree. So this was this autumn. So autumn just gone. So I got down to the lake at about 4:30 in the morning. And that morning there were about three other photographers that turned up at about 6:30. So I had this shot in the bag well before they were probably even up that morning. So it's always nice to know that. So with this shot, I used the wide angle lens, so the 14 to 24 mil that Trey uses. And I lit up the tree and the foreground just using a little LED light. It just sort of shone it in and around this area and filled in the light a little bit down here, just to reveal a bit of a reflection there. But yeah, it's hard to get a unique shot of something that's well photographed. So that's something I sort of strive to do with my work.
Doesn't By the way, all of you New Zealand photographers, I guess me included now, we're in this bubble, right? Like, oh, everyone's seen this tree. Everyone takes photos of this tree. But I guarantee you, 99.9% of the people, especially on the internet, that see that have never seen that tree before.
I have never seen that tree before.
Yeah, I guarantee you. I mean, it's amazing, you guys. You think, oh, just another photo of Milford Sound, Major Peak. It doesn't matter. You know, you could keep doing this stuff, even if you think it's obvious or whatever. Just go for it, because really, generally, the world hasn't seen it.
Yeah, and I think it's especially with the likes of Google Plus and Facebook, and we really do surround ourselves with like-minded people. So I guess it's important to know that there are a lot of people out there who aren't doing what we do, and to keep sharing. So this shot here, this was my first shot taken this year. So over the New Year's period, we get amazing light here. The sun sets down the head of the lake, and we really get some magical shots. So we had big waves coming in off the lake. So I was about thigh high in the lake with my big heavy steel tripod, and the sky just lit up. And this shot was taken 2 days later. So this is in Queenstown as well. So looking down towards Walter Peak. Where the Earns Law heads over.
You must have been a you must have been fairly deep by then, Jason, because that rock is a good 30, 40 metres out, isn't it?
It depends on the lake level, but I was probably waist high.
You should have said chest deep, mate. We're live here.
your neck deep. You're reaching up above with a
And your handheld.
I was down there today, and I was eyeing it up.
Today you're up to your armpits, midwinter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I need to buy a wetsuit for this winter. it's just seeing something and having an idea. I only had probably about 15 minutes to get the shot. So I sort of saw the light turning from a house, jump in the car, race down there. This is one of those occasions where it all kind of fell into place. So got lucky with that one. And this shot here was taken this past week. So it was actually taken on the same day as this shot. So you can see below the clouds. And above the clouds, the sun's always shining. So this is taken up Coronet Peak, which is one of the local ski fields here. And I basically watched these shadows traverse the whole way across the basin and up the Remarkables. So it's pretty special, especially being up there all alone, just kind of, makes me realise why I do what I do. This is the Moriah Gate Arch up near Karamea, which is at the top of the west coast of the South Island. So it's a big limestone arch. So I'm looking through it along the river, which runs there. It's a pretty stunning area. Lots of beech forest and caves and all sorts. So this here is the Holyford River. It's out in Fiordland. So if anyone's been out to Milford Sounds, they've driven past this river. yeah, really love the centered tree with the kind of coppery moss on it. And again, just sort of trying to get a bit of a foreground in there. And of course, wouldn't be a New Zealand hangout without some sheep. So, yeah, just this was taken up at Northburn Station during their autumn muster. Just like this little guy here looking back at me whilst everyone else is following the crowd.
Yeah, I used to go out with her at university.
Yeah, she's shady in the summer and warm in the winter.
Yep. Yeah, those Velcro gloves, eh? They're always coming in.
anyway. All right, that hits a little close to home there.
You get plenty of reason.
Jim, do you have some stuff you'd like to share with us?
And this is the Earnslaw, which is a steamship that runs the lake down here in Queenstown. So it's currently off the lake getting serviced. But this is actually possibly my only HDR in this collection. So this is it's probably about four shots. It's actually a panoramic shot on a 50mm, just to give a bit more of a normal realistic view. The wide angle was kind of twisting a lot of the lines. So that's something I quite often do with the 50mm.
Cool. Sorry to interrupt you there, Jason. I thought you had finished.
Sorry. Just got a few more.
Okay.
And this is up at Muriwai Beach in Auckland. So this is it's about a 20-minute drive from where I grew up, and probably about 5-minute drive or 10-minute drive from where Chris McLennan currently lives.
Correct. Yeah.
So this is just a really big storm, really windy night, and those gannets are actually probably about a meter and a half just in front of me. So they're all coming into land and just kind of hovering in the heavy winds before they sort of flopped out to the side.
Nice.
Yeah, this is a shot of Pigeon and Pig Island and Tree Island, I think it is, this little one. This is this was taken about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. There's just some sort of heavy cloud and the light just sort of coming through the clouds. So I treated this one quite heavily. It's a lot of contrast, a lot of vignetting on it. Just to really create quite a mood on that.
Stunning.
And this one here I shot last night. I was up the Remarkables last night. So behind me was actually a lot of colour in the sky, so a lot of purples and pinks, and a real sort of scrambly sort of cloud pattern. But I chose to shoot this, so yeah, it's kind of an evolution, I guess, of what I'm interested in. So I'm quite liking the sort of monotones at the moment. And we'll do the last one here. Last one is a New Zealand falcon. So this little fella landed probably about 5 meters away from me. And yeah, as you can see, he's as curious about me as I am about him. So it's a nice little special moment. So these guys are one of New Zealand's only predatory birds. So pretty unique little guy.
Cool. Maybe you should train them to attack these possums.
They're nowhere near big enough to do that.
So yeah, here's something people in the States will find amusing. I still find it amusing. In that, so there's a possum problem here in New Zealand. They're a pest. They were brought in here, and now they multiply and they eat bird eggs, and it's a big problem. And so what they do, I guess, is they have really nice fur for making coats and sweaters and stuff, right? And so if you go into like a nice shop, they have like expensive wool sweaters, but right beside them they have really expensive sweaters made out of possum. And so if I were to show back up in Texas, like wearing a $150 sweater that was made out of possum, people would think you're crazy. Because, I mean, it's like making something out of a rat, or, you know, it's inconceivable that you would ever wear possum fur in the U.S., much less pay hundreds of dollars for a sweater made out of a possum.
Yeah, that is American.
I'll never get my head around this idea. Maybe next year you'll see me, I'll just be like, you know, in Spies Like Us, Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd had these full-on fur outfits made out of possum. Maybe I'll change my mind.
Yeah, I see the bikinis. It's a possum shop that has bikinis made out of possum in their tray. Maybe you can get a mankini.
And there's the possum willy warmer too, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
And nip and tassels.
Yeah.
The funny thing with possums is they were brought over from Australia. So over in Australia, they're actually a protected species. Whereas over here, we have about 60 million of them eating out native forests. So it's
just build a bridge. Rather
I've got to say, though, Trey, the American possum is one ugly beast compared to the Australian one.
I guess I haven't looked at the two side by side. I found them both quite possum-y.
Are you calling Trey the American possum?
I'm not insinuating anything here.
All right, Tim, it's your turn for show and tell. And I hate to cut it short, but we are running short on time here a little bit. So maybe show us some of your best ones.
Just open. Yeah, so as I stated at the start, most of my work is now directing commercials and documentaries and shooting them. Photography has kind of taken a back seat, but I still love to travel with my camera, so I've got a few different images I can share from over the years. Just get this one. All right, there we go. That's right. Cool, so that's working there for you guys?
We just see your Finder window with names of files.
It might be my other monitor playing up here. 1 second. Just go turn that off.
You might need to just screen share the whole desktop instead of just the app.
My computer's playing up. What's going on here?
All right, hey, no problem. You can, why don't you play around with it and sort it out while Todd shows us his possum.
I should have seen that coming, shouldn't I? Mind? Right. We'll see if I can do a better job. What do we got here? Screen share. That's the one. Now, I didn't read the email properly. I thought I was supposed to come up with my top 10 places I love in New Zealand to photograph. So anyway, that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
So, yeah, you got me? You have got me, haven't you? Right. So I will keep this short. Right, Araki Mount Cook, which I just never get sick of shooting up here. So there's just endless options up at Mount Cook. It's our tallest mountain. You can go from everything from a portrait to this to wides. There's lakes plonked in front of it. You can go up to tarns. There's any kind of options. But the next shot, you'll see why I was so excited and so interested in Chris's clean sun stars, because this is the ultimate in dirty sun stars, if there's such a thing. This is up the Hooker Valley. This was taken one morning. It was one of those shots where you do a lot of hiking and nothing really happens, but then I still like it just because it's got a lot of visual punch.
What lens is it with?
I think it's the 12-24 probably, Chris, DX. Yeah. It's a couple of, a few years old, this one. Yeah, but when you're into contrasty situations like this, no cloud around, you really, your options are limited. So I got a bit of Atmos there. Another area, I love Central Otago where I live, which is a bit over the hill from where all the rest of these guys are. Well, from Queenstown anyway, Wanaka. It's just got some of the most interesting landscape in New Zealand, I think, just for in a subtle way. And there's just this is right on the boundary with the Mackenzie Country, Lindis Pass, and you just get these incredible opportunities for textural shots. And the broader picture here, I could show you 30 or 40 shots that are incredibly pleasing from this area. I just love it. I never get sick of shooting it every time I drive through. Now, the next shot is actually a testimony to complete ineptitude. This is taken up on top of Duffer's Saddle, which is the highest road in New Zealand, highest public road in New Zealand. It was the middle of winter. It's about 50K from where I live, and it's a mud track. The top of the road, top of the saddle was about a foot and a half deep in snow. I'd got stuck up there earlier in the day. Got home, had my dinner. 8 o'clock, went to get my camera to download it, and discovered I'd left an entire camera bag sitting up the top of the mountain. decided to go back up there. The worst part is that was the second time that day I'd left my camera bag on top of that mountain. I just don't know what the hell I was thinking. First time I'd remembered, at least in Cromwell, but which is only 30K away or so. But so anyway, I was up there. I thought, hell, what the hell, I'll fang off a shot. Pointed my stuck car at one of these tors up there, and put that on, put the park light on, and voila, we have a Milky Way shot. So anyway, that was a bit of a story there. I am, like Tim, part of a dynamic duo. So I'm here to, this is one of Sarah's shots. This is just over the hill from Lindis Pass in the Ahuriri Valley. The lupins we get here in New Zealand are just spectacular. They're pretty much the vegetarian version of a possum. They're introduced and completely invasive, but, you know, I love them, you know. Cute to cuddle too, and make great undies. next shot, this is a bit of an homage. It's very, uncannily Ratcliffian. I don't actually take a lot of shots like this, and it's not HDR, but by golly, it looks it. Is there too much colour possible? Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty intense, isn't it? I'm rocking along here, guys, because I know we're running out of time. Couldn't talk about New Zealand landscapes without Queenstown. This is just something I did the other day. I think most of you who are on G+ probably saw this, but that's been processed really quite heavily. Just playing around with inventing light, which is something I've been doing a lot of recently. So the light on the lake there is really just an elaborate vignette, basically, just been brushed in. It's the light that was there, and then I've vignetted the rest of the lake. This is a Coronet Road. This is my chance to tell what a hero I am, because I was about up to my chest in powder snow. And, I wasn't wearing possum undies, and it was getting pretty cold. It's like your snowball this morning there, Trey. Milford, if it's come up, there we go. Yep. Milford, what a place. Oh, you know, nice. You've seen Jason's shot, and it doesn't always do that. You know, these shots like that are like this, and Jason's, you see a fair bit of it just because of the sheer volume of people who go through there. But I've shot a lot there, and I haven't seen a repeat of that sort of lighting, and I haven't seen anything like Jason's. So, you know, it's the beauty of landscape photography. You never know what you're going to get. This is another of Sarah's. It's actually a much cleaner Sunstar than mine. And that's been a very popular image, and it's just, I'm just showing how different the moods can be in a exactly the same sort of time of day, same time of year, actually a bit different time of year, but it all can change. Kaikoura, where we get our whales here on the South Island. It's just a great place. It's just got that whole mountains and sea thing going on. The light can be abysmal, the weather can be abysmal, but you just get lucky sometimes with a nor'wester or something, and it all happens. Bit of Kiwi lifestyle, that's also in Kaikoura. Up the took Franz Josef on the West to actually, yeah, Franz, I didn't always get them mixed up. Whose idea was it to name our two most amazing glaciers with an F? I always get Franz and Fox mixed up, but this was up Alec Knob. Next time I'm going to take a dog sled up there, having seen the shots of Chris's.
With wheels?
Yeah, we'll get it chopped in. Lake Matheson, this one's been on postcards and placemats and everything since the time immemorial. It's just such a classic view, but it's exactly as Trey was saying. You can shoot this stuff and it's new to someone else, you know, and again, the moods change so much and you can end up with such a variety of images just by playing around time of day. North Island, I really want to shoot more North Island. I've just got to get up there is the main thing. With family, it's just quite a challenge. But Mount Taranaki or Mount Egmont is just your classic. I think it's the second most perfect volcanic cone in the world after Fuji, I think. I don't know. We'll say that it is. And again, another example of time of day and just what and location, just another take on that. And then something a bit different for me, actually, just throwing in some shots from a recent trip up to Napier. This is Pania of the Reef, a statue that is on the foreshore there. It's been photographed quite as much as the Wanaka tree, but it gets stolen by bogans every now and then, which makes it kind of interesting, puts a story in it. And Trey, you'd probably like up there in Napier because it's there's Art Deco architecture up there, which is just really interesting. I mean, you could HDR this sort of stuff to the cows come home, or the sheep, or the possums, whatever. But it's a really interesting place to shoot. And this was taken on the 24mm tilt shift just to add a bit of jazz. But unfortunately, being New Zealand, there was nobody sort of walking around for about 10 minutes because it's a ghost town. And the only cars that were going past were 1970s Cortinas. It's naked of people. And it's got a big sparkly statue, which was a bit of fun shooting. I have got all the exposures to HDR. I tried it, and I have to get a lesson off you sometime, Trey, because my HDR just looks terrible. So that is me. I'm out. Do you want... Oh, actually, because we've got to go back to Tim, don't we? So I won't show you my people, my shares. But, yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
No problem. We'll get to that next. All right, Tim, do you have screen sharing sorted out?
We'll give it a go.
Also, you might want to speak up a little bit. You're coming off a little, you know, low poppy.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you see my screen now?
Yeah,
yeah, we're getting to see more of Todd Sisson.
I know, it's freaky.
Yeah. Which, by the way, there's a comment here from Eunice Bunhar. He says, oh my, plus Todd Sisson bullied his way in. Smiley face.
He would have to be the biggest bully I've met, actually, that guy. He's a hard nut. He's just another angry Canadian, really. You know what that is.
Commonwealth.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so, this first image here, I shot this in, I think it was February this year. Belle and I actually woke up to smoke in our bedroom, and this big scrub fire started a couple of blocks up from our house. I think it was about 4:30 a.m., and just kind of we hit the streets, and it was like driving into a movie set, just kind of around the corner, and all these people out watching these flames at the back of their houses, and I like this still with the silhouettes of these people watching the flames, and it got run in a bunch of places, but quite into that still there. Next, this is just a still from a trip to Auckland, just a snapshot out the plane window. I don't know how many of these I have. Every time I fly, I shoot photos, but of the Southern Alps and Mount Cook looking nice and beautiful, all topped up with snow there. I think it was the first big dump of the season. This one. Yeah, so I was in Sydney last week, and Air New Zealand bought some of my old snow images for their Just 3 Hours Away campaign. And there's a billboard there on that building. It's about a It's about 3.5-story tall billboard of one of my images. But it's a snapshot of that, which was cool to see that in Sydney.
Did you know that they were going to crop it like that, or is it sort of a nice surprise?
No, I didn't know, because that's actually a landscape image cropped.
Yeah.
Portrait. And, blown up 4 stories tall off the 5D, and not that I could get close enough to it, but it looked pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And whilst I was in Sydney, I just, like I say, travel photography is a big passion of mine, and the classic Bondi beach swimming pool, and I kind of like this picture with this person's feet doing a tumble turn as the wave smashes over the beach there. Into that one. Then from my last Sydney trip a couple of weeks ago, I continued a walk from Bondi to Coogee, and there's this amazing bowls pitch here, and these old boys were out playing the game, and then at the end they just all got in their line and walked, and I don't know, I kind of like this one with these two guys shaking hands. I hope I can play warm bowls when I'm older, that's for sure. It looks like fun. This next image is funny. I shoot behind the scenes of commercials, and this was from a Hilux commercial last year in Canterbury, and this is where I met the company Robert's Dog, who I now do commercials for. So it's kind of a cool image to look back on that. But quite an intense scene going on there on the beach. This image is something a bit artsy. I just shot this it was last week actually, but I shoot a lot of mountain biking, and kind of like this rider is just landing the jump in the foreground, and he's out of focus, and the next jump's in focus, and there's a crazy kind of double shadow going on in the rays of light, just something a bit different, something a bit artsy. This image, so this was raises a bit stuff. I shoot a lot of skiing for Atomic. They're the world's biggest ski company, but I've done all of their key visuals for the last few years, and this is of Byron Wells, which is one of their New Zealand riders at Cadrona during 2010, and he's hitting about a 80-foot jump there, and that's all of Cadrona in the background. Oh, that's my phone ringing. I think this is actually the same location as what Chris shared before, that sort of POV from the motorbike handlebars. This is Nick Franklin.
Nick Franklin's, yeah.
Yeah, so this is on a Red Bull shoot I did with him, and this was just a throwaway, but I really like he's doing a Superman whip, which is, I think, just quite a cool trick in motocross. I just pulled that one up before as I was looking through some photos to show. I shot this image in 2007, so it's 5 years ago, but just a muddy little puddle up at Snow Park, which is one of the terrain parks up here in Rubet Hollis. One of my friends just riding across the puddle, but it all stood up nice and tall for us like that, so came out with a pretty nice image. Again, just another iconic New Zealand snowboard photo. This is Will Jackways at Treble Cone. It's just right now we're just getting another 30 centimetres of snow as you're seeing around Queenstown, so hopefully we can get up in the hills and get a day like this after it clears. It'd be nice. Another mountain bike photo. This was the cover of a couple of magazines for its time. I think it was 2008. And it's one of my friends just earing in the tree like it's a quarter pipe, which was pretty impressive. That's in the Queenstown Gardens. I was just shot with a couple of Nikon SB800s on some stands and 200mm lens and shot that. This is Nick Brown at Treble Cone once again. I think Treble Cone is one of the most beautiful ski fields in New Zealand, most amazing backdrops. But this was used in the recent 3 Hours Away campaign within New Zealand too. So that went on some billboards and buses and whatnot. So that was pretty satisfying.
Which lens did you shoot that with?
I think that was with the 50mm 1.4 Nikon D200. Yeah, it was my
first. Like there's a lot of compression. I thought you used a bigger lens.
Nah. It was my first year photographing, I think it was on the D200 with the 50mm, and I was just able to get nice, and there's a nice bank that came up behind the jump. I'm pretty stoked on that one, even though it's an oldie. And I'll just finish up here. I like shooting all sorts of artsy photos, and this one's just of my friend Hannah up at, I think it's at the beach at Piha. I just like how her toes are floating off the water there. But yeah, there's a few photos from me. So, unscreen share.
Cool. All right, thank you. I will just share just two photos very quickly here. Some things people might like to see. Perhaps. Share my iPhoto. So this is a new one. I worked on this most of the weekend. This is, I call a tableau vivant of wild horses. And, you know, these, it's very interesting to me when I take photos of animals, which I don't do much of, because I'm used to landscapes just kind of chilling out and not doing anything while I wait. But, you know, the horses, they're almost like, you know, it's like having eight gorilla pods out there that go in random configurations. You never quite know what they're going to do next. And actually, it's very interesting to me to try to figure out why one configuration of horses is more interesting than another configuration of horses. And it's and then eventually, you know, when you take enough pictures, you've got like 100 configurations of horses, and then you have to choose which is the most interesting scenario in which the horses have found themselves from a human perspective. Anyway, this is the one that I chose for whatever reason. But I got very into the whole thought process of humans and horses and the way we think they're interesting versus the way they might think this is quite banal. Okay, so anyway, that's my horse picture.
We have to keep you away from paddocks full of sheep then.
Yeah. So here's a photo that I took, and I never really explained how I did it. People might be curious. So I walked around this place. This is a Burning Man. This is called Charon. It's by a popular artist there that always brings really cool sculptures. And I walked around this for about 5 days trying to think about how to take a photo of it. And it's kind of cool. I don't know if you can see my mouse or not, but there are these three ropes on each side, and this wheel just kind of sits here with these skeletons. And it doesn't start moving until all six people figure out that they have to move the ropes in alternating patterns. And then once they start moving them fast enough, it spins and spins faster and faster and faster. And then at nighttime, a strobe comes on, which when it reaches a certain RPM, and it flashes whenever this guy, Charon, crosses a certain threshold. And then so you see this full-on animation of this guy rolling across the river Styx. And actually, they got a guy from Pixar to do all the animated figures. So there's a lot that went into this thing. Man. Anyway, I thought, well, how the heck do you take a photo of something that's strobing and moving and people are pulling on the ropes? And I'm always very interested in this idea. How do you do something that is happening across time to get it to happen in one photo? And so anyway, if you look close, I'll zoom in here. This isn't the full res shot, but you get the idea. So there's this one interesting moment, actually, when he looks at you and he kind of cocks his head sideways, and this is that moment. And, of course, I'm taking many photos, and it's an HDR shot and everything. But what I decided to do is take some of the longer exposures where it was moving in sort of a blur and blend that in slowly over time. So at the top, it's a total blur, and it gets more strobey down here with the flash of the strobe there. There's always a lot of masking involved. So anyway, there's a little bit of behind-the-scenes action for you. Cool. So now, if you guys don't mind, we're going to like rapid-fire through our Google Plus discoveries. In fact, I'll just rapid-fire mine very quickly. Peter Hurley, that's mine. Usually we show photos and we kind of talk about them and this and that, but I'll make sure that he gets plus mentioned along with whoever you guys mention in the show notes so people add them to their circles and this sort of thing. So we won't do any screen sharing. Just tell us who we ought to be following in case it's some sort of a black spot in our circling strategy. We'll go in reverse order this time. Todd, we'll start with you.
Okay, I'm going to have to shout out to three of them or else I'm going to be dead because I've announced this already. Rob Packer, this is my ode to Australians. So Rob Packer, Andrew Senegorski, another Aussie. And then Nate Parker, who's a very very good black and white guy from up in somewhere up in the top of America somewhere, I think. Maybe Maine? We'll say Maine. Yeah, I think he eats lobster for breakfast. Yeah, that's me. And they're all very good photographers. Yeah, excellent. Sorry about that, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Todd. Tim, what's yours?
Well, to be honest, I've only just started using Google Plus, so I don't have that many people that I follow at the moment. I'm still working on that one.
It's no problem. I'm not going to pressure you into it. Just, I'm happy that actually you and Bell have just started using Google Plus. You guys have been relieved of discovery duty tonight.
Oh, but I have one.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, the only other task I'll give you guys is go look at all the previous Variety Hours where we have suggestions of people to follow. And you'll end up following hundreds and hundreds of people, and they'll be great people, and your streams will be rich, full of inspirational things. We should do that, Dave. We should put together a compendium of everybody. Of course, you don't like this suggestion because it's more work for you.
Do like a shared circle.
Yeah, but I don't share circles. I don't share circles because the bad thing about a shared circle is that, okay, everyone that's in the circle loves you and thinks you're wonderful, and everyone that's not in the shared circle thinks you're an idiot. I've already got enough people that think I'm an idiot. I don't need to make this more pronounced, so I don't share circles. But I do.
We might hit the plus mention limit.
Ah, okay. Well, anyway, I appreciate the notion.
I think that's a wise move, actually, Trey. If I was in your position, I wouldn't either, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, even Thomas Hawk, who is really actually a nice guy, he shared circles with thousands and thousands of people in there, and he still has all this hate. I don't need more hate. I don't need it. Okay.
I'll share the circle.
Okay. You can share the circle. Jason, who's your find?
Mine is Mike Holman. So he's a New Zealand landscape photographer. He's based up in Auckland. So he's been in the game for a wee while. And check him out.
Okay, thanks. And Chris.
Yeah, mine's a guy from Amsterdam, actually, Jeroen Ott. It's a bit of a tricky one to spell. So it's Jeroen, and the surname is Ott, O-T-T. And he does a lot of cultural stuff in India, Tibet, Myanmar. Yeah, pretty low-key guy, but amazing work. I think it's quite similar to Steve McCurry's, actually. He's definitely worth a look.
Cool. Okay, and Belle, you do have one for
us. Yeah.
We'll end the show with you, so this will be a big one.
As Tim said, we're quite new to Google+, so I'd like to share my dad, Neville Jones, with the world, who's also a very passionate photographer. He goes on all sorts of crazy trips to Antarctica and safaris to Africa. He's actually got one coming up in 2 months, I think. He's spending 5 weeks in Africa on a safari to photograph animals and landscapes. That's his passion. So you should check him out.
Cool. Okay, thank you. And we'll make sure we get all these people plus mentioned when I reshare this later on. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you, everyone, for joining in the hangout. This has been great. Enjoyed seeing so many pretty photos, and it was nice to show a little bit more of New Zealand. And hope everyone enjoyed getting to know the guys behind the genie. Okay, so we'll see you next week, same bat time, same bat channel, and I look forward to it. Thank you guys very much. And now comes the part where we all just kind of wave goodbye from our little boxes.
Thanks, Trey.
Thanks, Trey.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.